Hello and welcome to Out of the Frame, conversations about photography. I'm Pia Johnson, your host, and this podcast features conversations about photography, creativity, and the world we live in. I'll be talking to other photographers, curators, academics, and researchers about their work, artistic process, and how they feel about contemporary photography today. Out of the Frame acknowledges the people of the Woiwurrung and Bunurong language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nation, on whose unceded lands we record each episode from. We respectfully acknowledge ancestors and elders, past and present. It was, and always will be, Aboriginal land. Today's guest is Zoe Croghan. She is a Melbourne-based artist who works with sculpture, video, drawing, and primarily collage. Her practice considers the relationship between the kinetic body and its surroundings, contemplating the role we play in our environment and how deeply our surroundings inform the cadence of our lives. The body has been the focus of Croghan's work, presenting the trained body and modern architecture as fascinating counterparts, each unyielding, severe, and rigorously functional in form. Created primarily from found photographs, her work studies texture, light, and form, examining the possibilities and limits of pictorial abstraction and metamorphosis. Croghan completed a Bachelor of Fine Art from the Victorian College of the Arts with first-class honours in 2011. She has held solo exhibitions at the National Gallery of Victoria, Gertrude Contemporary, Peckham 24 London, Silver Eye Centre for Photography Pittsburgh, Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, Perth Centre for Photography, the Melbourne Art Fair, and has had 8 solo exhibitions with Dane Singer Gallery since 2012. She has participated in numerous group exhibitions at institutions including the National Gallery of Victoria, Heidi Museum of Modern Art, Centre for Contemporary Photography, Monash University Museum of Art, Sam Stagg Museum of Art, Ian Potter Museum of Art, and the Art Gallery of New South Wales. Croghan has been awarded the Maddox Arts Prize in 2019, Art Gallery of New South Wales Studio Scholarship at the Cité Internationale des Arts Paris 2018, Art and Australia with Credit Swiss Private Banking Contemporary Art Award in 2014, the Asia Pacific Photo Prize in 2015, and the ACACIA Art Award in 2010. She has also been shortlisted for the Churchy Art Prize, Basil Sellers Art Prize at the Ian Potter Museum of Art, and the Wallara Travelling Scholarship. Work is held in collections including the National Gallery of Australia, Art Gallery of New South Wales, National Gallery of Victoria, Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, MUMA, Heidi Museum of Modern Art, Horsham Regional Gallery, Gippsland Art Gallery and Art Bank. Thanks, Zoe, for coming in today. It's really fantastic to be able to share the mic with you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I thought we'd just get started on this idea of you predominantly playing with body and surroundings or space, but the really time-consuming practice you have of collage, which just kind of blows my mind. I am not a patient person, so I feel very, very, what's the word, like inspired, I guess, by the precision of the medium. And I would love to know how you got into collage and why you've stuck with collage.
I think it was kind of accidental. You know, you have these experiences in life where you try something, and for the most part, you try something in, you know, as an artistic medium. Like, I was doing printmaking and drawing through most of my studies at VCA, and then we had a project where we had to make a collage and something just clicked. And it somehow, I think as a child and as a teenager, I'd always collected images. I had this, like, actually reflecting on it, probably quite weird habit of whenever I found an image I liked, I would take it to the local news agency on Ferguson Street and I would photocopy it and I'd put it in a drawer. And thinking about it now, I think it was probably a way of sort of assembling this private self through imagery and holding on to beauty in some way. And so when I started, I was like, oh, is this art? Like, is this a fine art? It took me a really long time to think of collage or conceive of collage as a fine art, probably because of I guess, the sort of scrapbook crafty connotations, and you have these sort of inbuilt elitism sort of within you. And the more I did it, the more comfortable I became with it, and the more I felt like it was, it for me, something about it clicked in and made sense as a way of kind of probably managing feeling completely overwhelmed by, you know, being buffeted with images every day and that sort of relentless image circulation, being able to photocopy an image, sort of look at it, spend a lot of time with it, and then pair it very simply with something else just feels like a catharsis, I think.
Also a connector, I feel.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, I suppose, a way of synthesizing multiple thoughts on a singular plane. And that can be, you know, I think our experience in the world is incredibly fragmented and increasingly so. And some, I think for me, when I'm making in that process, it feels like you're just able to consolidate multiple sort of sensations or experiences on one plane, even though usually I do, it's just two elements. Mm. You know, I use two photographs and synthesize them.
I love the idea of that original task as a kid, photographing, but also like putting it in the drawer.
Yeah, the drawer's a big deal.
The drawer is a big deal. Like,
you got to hide it away.
Yeah.
Photocopy and hide it.
But it's yours too, you know?
Yeah. It was this sort of private album of things that I found beautiful. And I think we all do this as we grow up. And I think increasingly so, we define ourselves through imagery. Mm. And I'm not sure that's a terribly good thing, but I think it can be a way of constructing a selfhood aesthetically.
Do you think you still do that now? Like the images that you're pulling together are reflecting yourself, I guess?
I think they are. Like when I first started making collage, it felt like this great pleasure that was entirely for myself of like, look at, I can just bring these beautiful images that I found together. Mm. And for a long time, I was convinced that someone would file a lawsuit against me because of the copyright infringements. And, you know, you have all of these anxieties about a medium. And, of course, that's still entirely possible. But
totally.
As a medium, it just makes a lot of sense for, I think, the way that I think and the way that I feel calmed by it. You know, not to treat it like a lavender bath or something
that is
sort of diminished and sort of about,
no, but
you
I think that's part of the artistic catharsis process too, and being able to create an idea and put it out in the world is part of that, as yourself as much as a comment of those images.
Yeah, exactly. And I think probably all creation comes from perhaps a desire to harness something or control something or manage something, maybe is a kind of way of putting it.
Yeah. Oh, my God, totally. Yeah. Especially as an artist, I think.
Yeah, as you would know.
Young female artist too, you know, there's all those pressures and I didn't study at VCA, I studied at Melbourne. And so, you know, they're really intense periods too where you're trying to claim things or counter things and put your voice out there too. So I could imagine discovering that process at art school was a really like, oh, this is what I could do. Like that would be a really beautiful moment.
Because you kind of just, you know, you work through things and you wait for something to catch or, you know, you have this expectation of developing a style or, you know, in some
the
way.
Classics, that total stereotypical way of like, oh, this is what Zoe.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, which I sort of object to in a way. But I think, and it, you know, I will say as well, my creations, my collages in art school were not encouraged. It's not, I think that, but you persist. Because you know how you feel about what you make and that has to exist regardless of how other people feel about your work to a certain degree.
Yeah,
you know.
Quietly confident, this is my work.
Yeah, exactly, even if everybody thinks it's stupid.
Totally,
like it's
totally.
Fun.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
So what is it to, like, you know, it sounds like images and photographic images have been kind of right there from the beginning, but, you know, you tend to work in series as well and I think that's something that I've always really admired because definitely in the photography world, lots of big renowned voices they work in kind of long-term kind of styles where it's not necessarily always a series. It's not a kind of closed, easy, it's sort of much broader shapes and themes and ideas or constructs. But you have a really incredible way of working with a set of images. For example, you worked with the Australian Ballet Archives. So I guess how, other than magazines and things, but like when you do work with a series, like say the ones with the Aussie Ballet, how do you go about that? How do you find the images that you want to work with or sourcing those materials to then go into your artworks?
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting working in series. You know, I think that's probably it. It suits me because it's a way of stretching out a thought across a body of work. And sometimes I'll just want to use certain shapes or colors, and it's about finding opportunities to include them in certain pieces. And you can do that across a body of work, and it can build meaning accumulatively. And whenever I first start a series, I think about it as kind of building a language. And it's usually in response to, you know, I suppose with all of us, you know, you have an idea and then you try and explore it, but it's usually in response to a piece of writing, or, you know, if it's a commission like with the Australian Ballet, it's in response to an architectural site or a history. So using the Australian Ballet Archive was amazing. You know, I was able to spend as long as I wanted in the archives of the Art Centre in the Australian Ballet, looking at their sort of, you know, they'd dump like 15 folders in front of me and leave me alone for 8 hours. And more or less, I would sort of flip through, and, you know, there were like little bits of ballet ribbon tucked in the plastic slips.
Gorgeous.
And, you know, annotations by the photographers, and which is kind of my, you know, my shit. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And then you sort of make a broad selection and refine that, and then try and figure out how to make an image out of them. And it was interesting with the Australian Ballet series because, you know, usually I use 2 images, and this was 26. And it was kind of like they had to back onto each other and have some kind of dialogue. So they had to communicate the entire way through.
Yeah, wow, that's,
you know,
pressure.
It's like a 20-meter kind of design, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it was also, I think, because those parameters were set, it was a challenge, but it was fun. Mm. It's kind of extraordinary as well because, you know, photography is powerful and the image is really powerful, I think, and reaching back into the history of performance, especially in that space, feels important, you know, and in a way that's where I first discovered dance because, as you know, my mum reviewed theatre for a long time. She was a theatre critic, and she would always want someone to come with her because she would get free tickets, and she'd drag one of us along whether we liked it or not. And so that whole space feels, it's where the space that I found has enriched my work a lot.
It's interesting you say that because, yeah, I guess I personally love that series so much because of my love of performance and dance and the history I have with it. But also just that idea, even what you said before about responding to a text or responding, we're not always just artists or photographers looking at images. We are totally part of a much larger, you know, arts, in inverted commas, scene. But it means too there's that cross-pollination. And that beautiful energy that you can read and develop ideas across mediums, across art forms.
And I think that was the revelation with collage, is that you could bring these disparate elements together. And when I realized that I could find a way of talking about dance and movement and the body through collage, it was like this revelation for me because I didn't know how to bring together those desires of, you know, the fascination with the body and dance and the photographic body especially, and wondering how can I bring together all of these interests and also my love of reading and books, you know.
Yeah.
And you can, and all of these things, of course, you know, all of these things enrich and inform our work, and it's reductive to think otherwise. Like, you know, we have such a rich source of influences and inspirations and materials.
Yeah.
And it's all right to be explicit about them, I think. And bring them into it, and, you know.
I agree.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And it makes, I mean, I'm talking to students all the time, you find what you love and all the different things combined to make your work unique and expressing that. I've been in the archives too down at the Art Centre, and there is this amazing thing where they're just like, here you go, here are these folders. But the thing that struck me, and I'm interested, was the materiality of it. You know, like old little slides or, you know, silver gelatin prints. And how did you kind of go from those documents into, like, is it photocopy? Is still that the process, or
it's
scanning?
It's a very high quality scan.
Excellent.
But my process of working in there is that I would flip through, and you kind of have to project onto them. You know, you'll see a limb and think, oh, that could be really interesting. And more or less, this is, you know, not very glamorous. What I did was take iPhone photographs of every single image I wanted to use.
Gotcha.
At the end of the day, I would sift through a few hundred. I would send them to the archivist.
Yeah.
And actually a lot of that photographic archive isn't digitized. So then, you know, it would take some time and they would do scans for me.
Wow.
And then they would send them to me and then I would print them out and then I would try and play with them in relation to each other, and slowly something forms.
But it is still that physical thing. You're not doing things digitally. You're actually having the material objects or paper or whatever and moving them around.
Yeah. And I guess that goes back to the source material as well. It's like I only ever work with printed source material that I've found. And it's not because I object to digital source material. It's just that I don't – it feels like if going onto the internet and searching for an image or finding an archive in the internet, it feels, I guess, at once too specific and too nebulous. It feels impossible to navigate or understand. But in the material world, you go into an op shop and you find books and you don't know what you're going to find. And I think that's part of – the love of it and the joy of it is the uncertainty.
Oh, I love that. I really love that idea. Now, you mentioned in an interview with Art Edit a couple of years ago now that you're not a photographer, but you're constantly working with photographs. So what is it about photos that you think draws you?
Yes, interesting question. I'm definitely not a photographer, although I do take photographs.
I would totally call you a photographer. I feel like that classification is, I guess, a corporate or a commercial kind of
course,
thing.
Yeah.
But part of me would be like, yeah, Zoe Grogan, photographer. Yeah. Like, I just, that's how I have you, you know.
I mean, even with the Art Centre piece, there's about six of my own photographs in there and I just slip them in there of architectural
that's
shapes.
Awesome.
And, you know, you can't help but when you focus on something visually for so long, that's how you see the world. Mm. Like, I just see the world as like a scattering of like absent limbs and like brutalish.
Fragmented. We go right back in there. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, I think photography is really, it's such an interesting medium because in a lot of ways it's kind of a medium that I object to. Culturally. In terms of the creating copies of reality and its relationship to power and the gaze and,
totally.
Possession. And so I think creating something that's abstract or something that's surreal kind of is a way of countering that. And I think my love for photography, I guess it's, I'm very inspired by a lot of the photographic artists in the Bauhaus, like Florence Henry or Laszlo Moholy-Nagy, and the way that they inverted the function of photography to, instead of reproducing reality, to producing kind of a surreality. And it's that twist that I really love.
And that tension.
Yeah, and that you can sort of hold up a mirror, but it's distorting. And I'm interested in that distortion because that feels honest and it feels, to me, more interesting to work with. I mean, I love photography classically. I'm a huge lover of photography, more than many other art forms. And it's not a condemnation of it, but in terms of my interest and where I come into making it, it's the accidents in photography or the things that go wrong that I love working with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Mm. There's something, though, it's interesting you say that about inverting it and distorting it, because your works have a clarity to them and an elegance and a simplicity. They're like a really amazing haiku, you know. They kind of set up two things but then turn on its head. You know, it's that for me, and they're exquisite. Like
Thank you.
Stunning, beautiful works and complex works. And there's something that I feel like you're doing, which is, there's that pairing, but it's quite contrapuntal, which is a music term. I'm not sure if you're familiar. It's sort of a counterpoint, or where you put two or more melodies kind of on top of each other.
Mm.
And it's, so it is that, that's where the complexity is. But at the same time, you feel like that pairing is so intrinsic you couldn't undo it. And that's what I get from your work.
I'm glad. I worked very hard to make it feel that way.
I also feel like there's something really inherently about dance. Like, forget that I know you've worked with dance archives, but actually the body and what you're saying, your love of dance, that movement, that kind of bodily internal core thing comes out. And again, I've got a history of dancing, so I feel like that, I can see that there. Do you think that has been a kind of core, maybe catalyst or inspiration, either consciously or unconsciously within the work?
Definitely, definitely. I feel like dance, you know, in the same way that literature and the same way that sort of architecture, it gives you a language or a framework to think about perhaps a more base emotional feeling of being in the world, of being surrounded by sort of, you know, your sort of built environment and trying to understand its relation to your body. You know, it's really trying to communicate the interconnectivity of things. So on the one hand, I feel like there's, you know, my studio is just, it's just books and paper and it's just this mess of images and trying to then refine something really simple and elegant and also that expresses something. Mm. You know, it's hard because, you know, like I said before, images are really powerful and they're really seductive. And I think we are really living in the age of the supremacy of the eye, you know, or the primacy of the eye, to use the language in Eyes of the Skin, of talking about how dominant the visual is now. And, you know, Western culture has been accused of that for a long time culturally, yeah. But I think it's increasingly so, which is why I say I'm kind of suspicious of photography in many ways. But I think it's increasingly how we see the world and define ourselves. It's almost more real than what's in front of us in a lot of ways. But I think that's why it's increasingly interesting to work in photography. And it's really nice to reach back into and bring something forward that has been discarded and find value in it and make it feel, I don't know, like it can express something about how one feels about having a body in the world, which is something we all feel. And even if that is abstract, to me it feels, you know, I've heard many say that all art is a self-portrait, and I think to a certain degree that's true. And so bringing dance into it was part of that.
Yeah. Mm. I think there's that physicality too. Like, I'm just thinking, you know, as someone that has that dance background, that's involved in the arts, that is like the physical kind of maneuvering of images materially, you know, there is this dance kind of at play.
Yeah,
there.
It's a little choreography.
Yeah, I think that's really lovely. And, you know, I probably do subscribe to the thought that all art, you know, is self-portraiture.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my form too.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But also that expression of how we, I guess, experience space. You know, for me, it brings up ideas of belonging and otherness and identity, but also just that physicality of sharing spaces or maybe not feeling like you can share a space, I think is really interesting. And I think you're right about photography historically is quite a tricky colonial tool, but defining ourselves against that or how we can counter that, I think is really interesting. And also making images that actually resonate with somebody else, right? Like that's the hardest thing. As you say, we're constantly informed by images.
Yeah, and you never know if you achieve it.
Like, no, you just...
Yeah, sometimes I go through the day and I try and count when I'm on the train to work how many images I've seen, singular images I've seen. And it's just really interesting. You know, I think our minds are so muddied by what we see and it's hard. You know, there's a lot of violence done to the subconscious and the eye, and it kind of invades your thoughts, whether you like it or not. And you can, you know, grasp control over these things to a certain extent, but that's the world we live in, you know, of complete overstimulation visually.
Yeah.
And so finding a way just to bring it back, whether that be to the body or to just meditating on a single image, you know, because it is... You know, despite the fact it's just two images and there is a simplicity to it, you know, of generally two images sitting next to each other or one on the other, it is time consuming.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot of time just thinking about, you know, the Bende dots or like the particular satin sheen of that print and how it's going to be difficult to translate.
That's so cool.
And, you know, and how you can shift the meaning of it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I've found really interesting as well with working with the magazine works. So recently I've made quite a few series of these magazine works where I, you know, it actually happened during COVID because my printer was closed. Obviously everything was closed and I was like, you know, going insane and wanted to make something. And I thought, oh, it'd be interesting to, you know, to see if you can make a collage within a singular magazine, folding back pages and cutting them out and trying to create a kind of a resonance or something that's, I don't know, clever and beautiful and striking and trying to invert the language of, I suppose, the fashion magazine that is about, I suppose, weaponizing beauty to create commodities and to sell products, and maybe giving, I think, a lot of, you know, I don't want to be tiresome in terms of condemning fashion magazines.
Sure.
They're incredible objects. And
yeah.
The ones that I'm using, they're kind of extraordinary in terms of their artistic direction.
I was going to say, I have a deep love of fashion mags from very, very long ago. And I think it was, you know, pre-internet, pre-access.
Exactly.
I remember when I'd go traveling, especially in Europe, I'd come back and my case would be so heavy because then I've got all the like European folks.
Yeah, because they were always the best.
Oh my God, and now all the British folk, you know, yeah. It was like this huge, big, thick, like we don't, they're not like
no.
their own kind of little small thing anymore. They were like these huge, incredible images that just, it actually subverted so much of like kind of, you know, commercialized Australian fashion.
It was yeah,
like,
exactly.
Look at the beauty. Look at the shapes. Look yeah. at the way of thinking about the world through textiles and images.
Exactly.
Yeah. So and I'm not going to condemn it. I'm with you there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's true of those magazines and all so much investment, so much energy, and so much. I think so much beauty, really. But on the other hand, it was also. Oh. You know, meditating on these magazines and these images of, you know, idealized perfection.
Totally.
It's
and like just taking it all in without any filter and just going, oh, I need to look like this. And
yeah,
like this
and I see.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think trying to find a way of restoring an interiority or changing the meaning of certain poses, it's interesting trying to shift intention as well in a photograph because you don't want to necessarily just use someone's photograph and turn it into something else. You want to change it, and you want to change its meaning, and you want to do that lightly as well, without being insistent and respectfully as well, because you know this is it's a real person modeling, it's a real person photographing, these are real people with interiority and with thoughts and so trying to respect that while just twisting it a little bit to make it kind of sinister or interesting or you know in relation
and
to
new
another
again
image.
So you've been represented by Dane Singer since 2012, is that correct? That's amazing. I'd love to, I guess in terms of representation but a relationship, you know, and that support and growth. And also lots of exhibitions, group and solo with Dane. Can you talk about that relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel very lucky to have been represented by Dane for so long because she started representing me when I was 21. It was my first year out of art school. And I would have sort of been like, yeah, of course, to anybody. I didn't know any better, but I feel very, very fortuitous to have been represented by a really discerning, kind, generous and respectful female gallerist. You know, I think she's probably she used to be the only gallerist that had represented more women than men in terms of commercial galleries in Melbourne. I'm not sure what those kind of odds are now, but she was the person who made me take my work seriously. I think it's hard, especially in Australian culture. You start making something and as quietly confident and persistent as you can feel, I think culturally sometimes you feel foolish, especially when you're young and you're starting out and you're trying to take it seriously. So having somebody else who is their business, that's what they do professionally, it allows you to take yourself more seriously and to be accountable. And I think I'm like many artists, I'm quite uncomfortable selling my work and promoting my work. I find that really difficult. Like I have been known for being like, you know what, it actually sucks, just take it for free. It's fine, you don't have to pay for it. And having somebody who values that and puts it, assists you in pricing it and advises you is incredibly useful, because I think as a sort of semi-hermit to a certain extent, I don't think I'd have much of a chance. But I mean, it's more that she has provided a structure with which I can work in with a lot of freedom. You know, she's never ever advised me on my work, or I often ask her what she thinks.
Yeah,
and she's very
honest,
responsive. Yeah, she's very honest. Yeah, she's pretty. She's pretty to the point. She's the sweetest person, but she's very discerning and very intelligent. And will give her opinion when I ask for it. But she also just allows me to do what I want. Like I remember when she first offered me a solo show when I was 21, I was like, oh, so what do you want me to do? And she was like, oh, I just want you to do what you do in this space. And that's always been the dialogue. So, I feel very, very lucky to have somebody helping me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think, I think, as you say, because she has worked with you for such a long time now, I imagine that it's more than just that kind of representation thing. You do have an understanding of maybe your hopes or values or aims of what you want as an artist.
Yeah.
But also, I guess in terms of kind of career stuff too. And as you say, like, exactly. I don't want to have to try and sell my work to people, or I don't want to have to like get out there and self-promote. How do I navigate that stuff and getting that guidance from someone like her would be pretty incredible.
Yeah, exactly. And she, you know, she knows every artist, she knows every gallery, she knows every grant. She gives me, you know, a lot of opportunities. She's working very hard behind the scenes there.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, which just means that I can focus on my work without worrying too much about
all the other things.
Yeah,
right?
Everything else. It's a lot of work, as you know.
Yeah. So let's talk about some recent work, especially your photo books. They're both done by Perimeter.
Yes, correct.
Editions. The first was titled Arc, and then you've just launched your second, which is called How to Cut an Orange.
Yes.
I love that title. First, I want to know why that title, but then also if you could talk us through the book form and how that relates, you know, quite differently, I think, compared to your artwork. I was just thinking when you're talking about contemplating things that you've got some work up in Heidi and the architecture so informs looking at the work. And I think that's what, you know, any kind of white cube dubs or when you had your show at NGV, you know, like the spaces really do shift how you engage as an audience member, but you're also time limited. Whereas the book, you know, I can take it with me and I can look at it repeatedly, but in a very different form.
Yeah.
So how does the work move from that exhibition space into that, and also why the title for your new book? Because I'm so curious.
It's actually not very exciting. It was sort of, I keep lists of phrases and terms that I like because it can be really hard to title. You know, usually the works title themselves.
Titles are hard.
Show titles and book titles, they're really hard because it feels like it needs to reflect an encapsulation of, you know, for in this case, 8 years of work. And I was going through my multiple notes in my secret drawer and my list and thinking about terms, and I came across this one, which I've kind of, you know, had in my back pocket since I was actually like 22 and trying to think of, you know, you just have terms and phrases and ideas, and it felt kind of inviting and instructional and abstract, but, you know, it talks to the process of collage and it's kind of perfumed in a sense
and messy
yeah, exactly, juicy and messy,
because it is a correct way of cutting an orange to keep the juice in,
and I'm not very good at it. Yeah
I remember learning that.
I need to learn how to cut an orange
versus peeling orange, different,
totally different thing. Totally different thing. So yeah, it's pretty loose, the title, but I sent Perimeter a long list of, I don't know, here's a couple of things and this is what I'm thinking. And they were like, that one. And I was like, good, because that's the one
you wanted.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's really interesting because you become so used to seeing your work, you know, in the private space of your studio when you're making it. And so you have such a closeness to it. And then in a gallery space where, you know, really it's distant, but it's very controlled in the sense that it's on the wall. But there's also a degree to which I have control over how it's presented in the gallery, have control over what it is in the studio, but in a book it kind of has its own life. And I think I never look at my work in retrospect. You know, you're so close to it, and so it's really hard to look back on your work and see patterns. And so the first time I picked it up, I was looking through it and I was really shocked at how many images there were of women turning their face away or hiding their face. I hadn't realized that was a sort of consistent
thread.
Image and thread in my work, and I felt really unmasked. And, I had always thought of art as a way of kind of concealing and hiding the self, but the self comes through and the self speaks in the work, and it haunts the work, and of course it does. And I know that, of course, but I was surprised at that thread that sort of stretched it through the entire, like, 8 years of work.
You become really self-conscious, right?
And very seen, which I, you know, find difficult. But it felt like a really organic process working on that book, you know.
Yeah.
Because Arc was, I think it was 2014 off the top of my head, but it was an Asia Pacific Photo Book Archive prize. So I think I was kind of, I don't know, probably 23 or something, 24. And I won the prize and I was shocked. Like, I applied on the off chance and I was like, there's no chance. Like, forget about it. And I was so delighted. And the award was having a book made of your work. And sort of in the coming years, Perimeter and I have always casually been like, oh, we should do another book. Yeah, let's do a book.
Yeah.
And then we really, you know, knocked it down at the end of last year. And they suggested including Mum's poems in the work, in the book. And I thought that was a really beautiful idea. And it was interesting with that as well, because I had never thought about my mum's poetry and my work having a shared sensibility. And realizing that they did, that was beautiful. And the introductory essay is written by a very, very close friend of mine who's also a poet. The title of that is Cut Through Opens to Perfume. And so she was really working playing off with the title and she was playing with the form of the essay and mimicking collage through the essay. The essay is a collage. And so there's all of these really beautiful resonances and it just happened smoothly and then the book was released.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that you've brought in those other elements and I love that you're working with your mum. I have deep respect for your mum.
As do I.
And I think that idea, again, of, you know, we come back full circle maybe of that idea of language and ideas, speaking to photos and image making and process and just being really like as much as we do live in images, we also live in words and language and different modes of language. And I think that connecting and speaking to each other is really lovely.
Yeah, because I think so much of my work and probably so much of other people's work is about, you know, drawing those connections and, like I was saying before, about the interconnectivity of things and being able to sort of pull them into something coherent or something that at least feels to a degree coherent. And, I think it was the book felt like a solidification of a lot of things I've been thinking about. And, it's such a privilege to have your work printed in a book
totally.
Form.
You know, going to libraries, going to bookstores, as you know. So what next? Because you had a really busy little bit here with shows and the book. Are you one of those people that dives into the next project, or are you sort of quietly go and find the next inspiration?
Yeah, definitely the latter. Yeah, I feel like I need a period of rest before making again, and also like just practically, I need time to find. Like to go out and find more images to work with. But I think I'll probably, it's funny. Like I had 3 projects in the space of a fortnight and I have nothing booked for the rest of the year, so, as is the way with art. But I'm beginning to think about, I've been wanting to make a video work that is exploring the relationship between surveillance and photography and violence. And I've wanted to make it for a couple of years and it might be a nice time to start pulling footage for that. And just to think about it and play around with it. And I've got quite a lot of time, which is a real luxury. So and video is very time consuming. So, that's kind of one of the things that I'm thinking about. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Zoe.
Thank you,
really
Pia.
Wonderful.
It was great to talk.
Out of the Frame is supported by RMIT University Press Play Studio, is produced by Pia Johnson, sound engineering by Alex Edward, music by Steph O'Hara, and graphic design by Brent Leidovitz.